I'm Colleen McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
For the first time in our illustrious career, we are broadcasting live from Granbury, Texas, the home of the dipping prince of All Marine Radio, Michael Musselman. What is up, Tex?
We are expeditionary.
It is home. It is I Love Me room.
Yeah, this is my my thinking room. Well, it's my dad's stuff, and then my stuff.
The it's got a, let's see, so we got a couple cool rifles here. We got a cool vintage 19th century pistol. We got some books. We got a very cool, you can explain that, kind of a miniature Marine Corps colors.
Yeah, battle.
And then,
battle
what, Mike, what is that? He's got a really cool statue of an infantryman. That's a pretty cool, it's a pretty cool gift. Where'd you get that?
That was given to me. I was the guest speaker at Infantry Training Battalion. Prior to departing the Marine Corps, they brought me in to talk to all the young Marines, kind of my life, leadership, things that guided me to be and who I was. So that's what they presented me as a gift for speaking to them that night.
So they, and that was from SOI?
Yeah. ITB, Infantry Training Battalion.
Describe that for everybody. It's a...
we'll take a picture of it and put it on the thing, okay. But it's a statue of an infantryman with a full battle rattle, you know, current battle rattle that we had in Afghanistan and Iraq. But it, yeah, it's a nice bronze. It's a heavy. I mean, it's pretty... It's pretty nice. I don't think I can reach it, but it's a...
Okay, just so you know, he's got his microphone, and he's stretching it.
Yeah.
He almost knocked his dip cup over.
Yeah.
No, the bronze is pretty cool.
And but it's a Marine infantryman with an M16. Again, if you look at the detail of it, it's pretty remarkable. He's got his IFAC, he's got his...
got his cargo pouch.
Yeah, everything's on there.
He's got his...
it's pretty neat. He used to have the carabiner that I used to carry, too. So.
No, it's cool. It's cool. The so we're in your I Love Me room. And now what's that?
That's the actual pitch. That's the print of the bronze plaque that's at 1st Marines Memorial Gardens of all the Marines in 3rd Battalion 1st Marines that lost their lives in Vietnam from 1966 to 1971.
And that's when your dad was part of the battalion?
Yep, my dad was part of that battalion. It's hard to see from this distance, but all those little etchings are names. That's what's really crazy.
Wow.
There's a lot of them.
I want to say 2,600 from 5th Marines that were killed in Vietnam alone.
Yeah.
So, 1st Marine, you'd figure the number would be something similar to that. But, until you see all the names and what it looks like, I think those memorials are pretty fitting because it's, I think it's an ominous warning to everybody that this is serious business. And all these young men, and I'm not sure if there's any women up there, but if there were, gave their lives for this country. Pretty sober. Where did you get it?
My dad gave that to me. He gave that when he came out. He brought that and a bunch of other stuff. And then behind us is his photo when he was at AIT, Advanced Infantry Training at SOI.
And so what you see is all these Marines in some sort of bleachers, and they have white T-shirts. They have the old
Sateen.
World War II era. You know, obviously steel pot and the helmet cover looks great. And then you have an officer in his khakis.
Yeah.
Looks like an officer in his khaki uniform sitting in the center and what looks like two staff NCOs on his left and right. And then the whole company there So very, very cool. I love those old vintage pictures. So your I Love Me room. Why? Tell me the significance of the star. What is that?
Oh, that was that's the Texas Lone Star.
Oh, that's the Lone Star. We are, make no mistake about it, we are in the Lone Star State.
Yes, so, absolutely. Mac got a full dose of that today.
No, it's awesome. You know, let me just tell you, I think whenever you travel the country, you do get a sense of how cool a country we have. You know, and there's a lot of different pieces to it. But we went from Dallas-Fort Worth, which is huge, to Granbury, Texas, which is not so huge, but got a chance to meet Buck today and go to Buck's Customs Boots Distillery. And actually, we sent the house mouse home to go prepare food, and Buck and I hung out, and then Buck brought me over. But everything that you've heard Mike say about why he loves this place is, I will tell you, is in spades. Awesome people in small town America. And you know, you've heard us say, the shit show that is what we see on TV, that's not America.
No.
America
far
is,
from it, yeah.
Is these great people who go do good things every day. You got a couple, do you want to talk about your rifles or no?
Nah, I mean, they're just some nice rifles. One's pretty fancy.
I've never seen, I've never shot, I've seen pictures of it, but this is the first modular stock I've ever been around. Are you, I would imagine you love modular stock.
Yeah, the gun on the right is the gun that I worked with trying to get it implemented in the Marine Corps when I was still there.
Talk about it. Why is it significant?
Because it's modular, you can switch out calibers with just moving the barrel in the action.
Explain switching out calibers.
Just a couple screws, you drop the barrel out, put a new barrel in, you can change different calibers. It's chambered in 260 Remington. So you can change, put it in 308, 6.5 Creedmoor, any kind of short stroke. If you do Magnum, you'd need it. All you got to do is change the lower out and then put the new barrel in. You can go to 300 Win Mag to 338 to 50 caliber. So, I mean, it's a very simple gun, but yeah, pretty complex. As far as simple goes, it offers the user more capability depending on what mission set he wants to do.
All right. And then the other one is another modular rifle. Let me just tell you, it looks cooler than hell, and it feels good in your hands too. But what's the purpose for the circular space?
Oh, that's where your thumb goes, or your other.
That's the back end of the pistol grip.
Yeah, okay. And that's the actual that was a British sniper rifle that the British Army used. It's the L-15, L-15. 115A3, so it was in service up until just recently, but it's an Accuracy International. So that's what it looked like. That's what modular looked like before the gun on the right. So the one on the left is an older modular, but it's still pretty cool looking. You can switch that out pretty easy too, but the one on the right offers more capability.
What about the one on the left is way cooler looking. What about talk to me about the scope that's on the on your modular rifle?
The one on the right?
One on the left.
Oh, that's just a standard 14 to it's a 14 power variable scope, long range scope. The one on the right is actually a bigger scope. That one's 24 power. It goes from 3 power to 24 power, so it's again, a lot more capability.
All right. I had a question for you about Granbury today.
Mm-hmm.
So we leave the airport. Mike takes me on a guided tour on the trip home. Tells me why that he doesn't like big cities, and then we get closer to Granbury. Then we go see Bucks. For people that don't know, what was your connection? You had a sister-in-law that lived here?
No, the connection was just by circumstance. It was this house that we're in right now, this beautiful home that we live in. The people that first bought this house and lived here, they only lived here for 11 months, and it was fairly new. It's only been built. It's only been standing for 5 years. We've lived in it for 3. And we met the owners, and they were going to put it on the market. We met them. we actually sat here in the dining room and talked to them for about an hour or so, and we really liked them, they liked us, and then they told their real estate agent that they were willing to sell only to us. So we wrote the check that day, and then the rest is history.
The if you were to give people getting out, any advice about getting out, in retrospect, relative to your experience, is there any, I know you hesitate a lot of times to give advice, and you tell me that a lot of times it's overrated. Do you have any advice to give?
Well, the only advice I give people is the fact that you got to try and change your whole lifestyle. Go find something small, slow pace, enjoyable, you know, and it comes down to the people. I mean, I made a conscious decision that I wanted to get away from the Marine Corps, get away from all of the stuff, you know, as far as I wanted to get from the rat race, get away from the military, get away from the whole fact of, you know, living that lifestyle and then continue doing that same thing in civilian life. And that's what small town offers you. No one knows your background. No one knows what you came into, what you worked for. You can just start all over again.
So that was a big attraction to you? That was what you were looking for, to get away from the Marine Corps and just get back to some semblance of normal?
Yeah, something I can remember as a child, you know, growing up with people that were just good human beings, good citizens, good community. That's what I was looking for. That was the first and foremost thing.
So has this, everybody's getting a chance to hear your real voice.
I know, it's
crazy. As opposed to your little, like, weenie cell phone voice. You know, we get to hear your man voice. Has it been what you thought it would be?
What, this radio show? Or the Granberry?
No, this radio show is exactly
my
what
voice?
You thought it would be. Your voice is far less. People are going, oh, man. He does sound a little bit more masculine. But, yeah, Granberry. Is it what you expected more?
It's less? More than I expected. It really, it turned out to be, you know, exactly what I was looking for. So, I mean, it's been an amazing transformation.
All right, let's talk about, we have a trip coming up starting tomorrow.
Yes, first thing, we take off tomorrow, head out to, head across Texas into Arkansas. We're going to jump up into Memphis, Tennessee, and then down into Alabama. So, and then we stop in Alabama.
We're going as far north as Memphis?
Yeah, we're going to, it's actually shorter, believe it or not, to cut up and then across than it is to go through Shreveport and then across Alabama that way and then up. We shave off about an hour of time.
All right, and so we'll remain overnight where? Where do you have?
Probably somewhere in Alabama.
Somewhere in Alabama. And then second leg of the trip on Wednesday. So tomorrow, I'll figure out the complexities, but we'll probably do, if everybody remembers, Charles Kuralt used to do these on-the-go segments. So you'll probably hear at least an hour, maybe two, of Mac and the Gunner as we drive across
America.
As we drive across America.
Yeah.
Yeah. We may even interview maybe a couple on-the-spot interviews of people that we...
Some veterans pick out some people with stickers on their cars.
In gas stations or something like that. So it should be, because Gunner, I mean, he has some interesting philosophies. We were going to get into one today. I'll just tease it a little bit. Gunner has a philosophy about infidelity. And how geography contributes to infidelity. So that's just a teaser. You might hear that. You might hear that tomorrow. So something for you to look forward to.
Yeah.
So anyway, do you like driving cross country? Some people do. Some people don't.
Yeah, I like it better than flying. I don't like, because flying entails big airports, a lot of people, and stuck in a tube with people that I don't know. So yeah, I'm not a big advocate of flying. I like driving because then I can just zone out, listen to music, and just kind of take in everything around me.
You know, I'd rather drive myself, but I will tell you this. I had a very good experience today on Delta Airlines. Legroom was good because so many airplanes and now are being configured with less and less legroom. And I just, if you're going to fly, I would tell you, check out Delta because I had a – It was great. It was great. The people were wonderful. The flight itself was wonderful. And but I'm a driver. I like driving. It's a beautiful country. If you haven't driven it lately, listening to music, checking things out, you get a sense of how big the United States is. Do you have a favorite part to drive in the United States?
Yeah, I like driving the I-40 for me is probably the I like the best because you get to see everything. You see the plains, you see the mountains, you see, you know, the big swath of America. So 40 for me is probably the best route for me.
Which part of 40 though? Let me pin you down.
I would probably say like, you know, I like the Tennessee area, like the Arkansas area, like the trees and the forests and the plains.
I'll tell you, my favorite stretch, is it 10 or 40 that runs to the western part of Texas, northern New Mexico, northern Arizona?
Yeah, that's 10.
That's 10. I think that's one of the prettiest drives. I mean, in my opinion, it looks like something out of movies. Part of what you drive through in New Mexico, the Butte area.
Yeah.
It's absolutely beautiful. And northern Arizona, look much different than...
Well, that's 40, though. So now you're talking, if you're going...
Well, then it's not 10. Why? You said it was 10.
10 goes through, like, I think Phoenix, southern New Mexico, the deserts, and then the bad part of Texas.
That's not what we're talking about.
So 40, yeah, northern New Mexico, Albuquerque.
Route 66. I think that's a beautiful... If you've never driven that, I think it's one of the prettiest drives in the country.
Yeah.
And again, when you think of Arizona... I guess I would say that it's more Sedona-ish than it is
40.
Than it is Yuma-ish.
Yeah.
Okay. And the same thing with I never knew New Mexico, known as the land of enchantment, could actually be enchanting because the drives I took were cutting diagonally through it, northeast to southwest, and you didn't see a whole lot. You saw, you know, went through White Sands, cutting down to 10.
Yeah, that's desert. That's not it's barren.
That's the land that time forgot. There's nothing enchanting.
Right.
And then you go through Alamogordo, right, where they have the Manhattan Project. And they still have the bowling alleys called like Atomic Lanes and things like that. Atomic burgers, nuclear fission french fries and stuff like
that. Yeah. The UFO weirdos down in Roswell.
Do you have any quirks when you drive? Do you like to do you dip? Do you drive straight through?
I try not to stop except for gas. Again, driving with the wife, she doesn't like driving me because I don't like to stop. I was the kind of guy that I drove from Quantico, Virginia, San Diego without stopping except for gas. And then every time I got tired, I'd just hang my head out the window.
How many hours?
I left Friday night, got in Sunday morning. So, I mean...
I've done it 47 and 53.
Yeah, I'd say that seems pretty long to me. I'd probably cut that down to maybe 40 hours. That's a little bit long for me. No.
You know what? One of the things in the Marine Corps is you can stay up for 2 days straight. The second night is, I think, difficult. First night, you're fired up, easy. You're wide awake, that's easy. Sun comes up, your body rejuvenates, and then once the day starts going, right, you're just doing it. Second night, if you have to do that, it's a bit of a challenge.
Yeah, lights start getting hazy.
Exactly.
Headlights start turning into, yeah.
Those turtles on the interstate become more important.
Yeah.
What was that?
Yeah.
Window down. That's when if I try to dip, I have a puking reflex. Yeah, no kidding. I have a puking reflex that goes with dipping. And so it's not always great. I have to get through that puking. And then, dipping helps me stay awake, so I'll dip.
Mm-hmm.
I just have to get through the puking.
Five-hour energy.
You know, I don't know why we don't get them to sponsor All Marine Radio. Because let me tell you, there's nobody that can give them a better endorsement than
oh,
we
yeah.
could. Where did you?
I lived on that stuff.
Where did you get all that?
Oh, I had it sent. They sent it to me.
Oh, they sent it to you?
Cases of it. Yeah.
If you had to stay alert.
And
I don't mean like that zombie alert, but something that was natural and didn't feel normal, right. but also didn't keep you up afterwards.
So give you that hyper reflex where you're kind of jumpy and jittery. No, it just gives you, like, you had a good sleep and you're relaxed, kind of alert.
Yeah, 5-hour energy. So do you have those when you drive?
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you get up in the morning, do you set a distance goal? Like, I'm going this far. It doesn't matter how long it's going to take me. I'm going 1,200 miles. I'm going 1,400 miles.
No, my goal is when I get up in the morning and I get in the vehicle and leave is to get to my destination.
Oh, really?
I just go.
So how do you figure out when you're going to stop? When your body
when
says...
When my bladder tells me.
Mikey, we need to stop. There's one document on the wall. What is that?
That is my last and final promotion to CW05. All the other ones are in the closet.
You maxed it out. So that one made. Tell the story about this Marine Corps colors. It's I've never seen it. That size of colors.
It's a smaller. I would probably say it's 3 feet across, but it's the red battle colors of the Marine Corps. It's Marine Corps emblem, and it's hand stitched. So it's in the gold. It's a really bright gold lettering. It's hand done, but it's on a really thick red cloth. I mean, it's a quality type. Something you frame. Something I'm going to get framed here soon.
And where did it come from? Because let me tell you, if you see the embroidery on it, you're like, what is that? It's beautiful.
Yeah, so that's old. I mean, looking at the yellowing of the fabric and everything else, it's gold. It was given to me by a gentleman here who owns a pawn shop.
Here in Granbury?
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
he came across it, and I stopped in one day, and he said, hey, I got something for you to look at. And then I looked at it and said, okay, how much? And he said, well, it's yours. So he gave that to me because he knows that it means a lot to me. So I like that kind of stuff.
You should send a picture of it to the historical division and ask.
What's the history behind it?
Yeah, because it's not something that was produced commercially.
Oh, no. This is
the amount of detail that's in it and the quality of fabric. This is a Marine Corps.
Yeah, it was something important to somebody. I don't know what the history would be. It'd be kind of neat.
I think it would be cool because it wasn't – we don't make stuff like that for nobody.
No, that's – and we don't make that kind of quality anymore like that. That's something that was done many, many years ago.
Okay, I'm looking at Mike's books now. The U.S. silver dollar collection. What is that?
Those are all of the Morgan dollars in existence. Every Morgan dollar that was ever minted.
Where does that come from?
Tina's dad, that was his collection, and then he gave it to Megan. This is more of a... My professional collection of books is on the other bookshelf in the bigger room.
This is family.
This is kind of like everything. All the Tom Clancy novels are on the bottom. My first edition of The Hunt for Red October on the bottom. That's worth the money. That's hardback. All the hardbacks of Tom Clancy, first edition. And then, it's other books, other readings. I got a Stephen Hawking's book on there on, quantum physics somewhere when I get really, really bored.
And then a number of Vietnam War books?
Yeah, so
those your dad's?
Yeah, the top two are what my dad gave me. So, like, an old copy of The Old Breed, History of the 1st Marine Division, some recruit books, my recruit book up there, and my dad's recruit book when we went through MCRD. And then some other stuff. And then there's a scrap. I actually have a scrapbook. I'll briefly show Mac after this because that'll take some time. But photo albums from my wife when she was a little kid. And then a bunch of it's just assorted books. I mean, there's all sorts of stuff down there.
You and I were both talking about, we're both Blue Diamond guys.
Mm-hmm.
Were you ever PCS to Camp Lejeune?
Never. I've always served in the 1st Marine Division. When I was in Operating Forces, I was always in the Blue Diamond.
Did you did you do that on purpose? Did you not like the East Coast or what?
No, I was just lucky.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, I started my career there. I ended my career there.
The middle top part of your career there?
I spent 24 years of my 31 years in Blue Diamond.
Were you moderately familiar with the ranges at Pendleton?
Yeah, you could say that. I mean, I knew where I was at. I couldn't get lost.
Could you tell the history of range? Okay, let me just tell you. I know you're coming out here to tell me about this range, but let me tell you the evolution of this range. Okay.
Yeah, how this came. Okay, actually, so. I have in the other room, and I got to get it framed. I have a printed copy of the hand drawn Camp Pendleton ranges in 1942.
Wow.
Yeah, like what they used as range control.
Were they much different?
Oh, yeah, the whole base was a range. Everywhere. Everywhere was a range.
To shoot?
Everywhere.
What's the one place that you would tell me they used to shoot here that I would laugh at?
Las Pulgas. I mean, where the 11th Marines was located. That was our impact range. Yeah, so, I mean, this is way before I-5 was ever built.
Right.
So,
It was a coast highway.
It was coast highway. So they used to shoot right up on the edge. Machine gun range, mortar ranges, hand grenade ranges.
Well, how the hell do you ever use that land again?
They sweeped and cleared it carefully.
Very carefully.
Yeah. Bulldozer guys with body armor.
Were you actually going to say that to me? Very carefully. Wow. A little bit of history. Back there,
if you look real closely, there's my 3.5 buck. You can see it in the back corner. Right.
Oh, I just got a position report on the buck recently.
Yeah, there's the buck from 3.5. That's the buck.
Explain everybody.
Well, that's the mini buck. Everybody gets a copy. All the officers, if you serve in 3.5, you get a mini buck.
Explain what that is.
The buck is a Scottish gentleman, and he's wearing a kilt. But the true buck is actually about a 4 foot hand carved Scottish guy with a kilt. He wears a coin purse, and in the purse is, what it is it's a mascot of 3.5, and they call it the Buck. I don't know how it got the name of the Buck, but.
How long have they had it?
Since Vietnam. As far as I know, it's Vietnam. And then the junior lieutenant in the battalion is assigned as the Buckmeister, and he's responsible for making sure the buck shows up at every formal event and in any event that the battalion's in. And so on the buck's chest is every ribbon that if that lieutenant was serving as the buckmeister, he got that award while he was the buckmeister, then the buck rates that medal as well. So he's got a chest of ribbons. I mean, he's got like silver star with, you know, two silver stars.
So there would be all second lieutenant, junior lieutenants in the battalion, awards that they won.
And then the
lieutenant rated it, then the buck.
Yeah, and then in the little Scottish coin purse that he wears above his groin is the dog tag. If you get to serve as the buckmaster, when you're done serving, you put your dog tag in there. So you can look through that and look at every lieutenant that ever was the buckmaster of
3.5. So, now, wait a minute. Isn't it a big deal to steal that thing, or?
There used to be. I think they've changed that. Where
stolen between enlisted
so,
officers?
Yeah, it used to be. The buckmaster used to just be for officers. And then I think shortly after when we were there, the battalion commander changed the rule and made responsible for everybody. So they stopped stealing it. Because it used to have, I mean, he was stolen when we deployed. And then he didn't deploy to Iraq with us. He was somewhere gallivanting in California. And then he had his own Facebook page, and they'd show pictures of where the buck was. While we were doing something, the buck was in, like, Maui, Hawaii, you know, on the beach, and they'd show a picture. The buck was somewhere in Oregon. I mean, he was everywhere. And then we paid the ransom where that was, you know, like a 96 for all the enlisted guys, and we got it back.
What else? There was a toilet that 2.9 had, or somebody had that was, they called it the Thunder Mug from Vietnam.
Yeah, everybody's got a little.
You know, there's a number of those things that exist in the Marine Corps, these miniature, and they all seem to come out of Vietnam.
Well, no, I mean, in LAR, when Jeff Powers was our battalion commander, we went up to 400 Leggett up in Northern California for a training exercise one time, and we were outside of a mini putt golf course, and there was like a 9-foot fiberglass rabbit, and it was a big rabbit, a huge thing. Was 9 feet tall and probably about 4 feet around. Everything was huge. It was heavy. You take like 3 or 4 guys to lift this thing. And then they took it one night off the putt-putt golf range, and they strapped it to an LAV and then drove it back to California. And then they called it the Battle Bunny. The Battle Bunny deployed with them to Iraq and was seen in Iraq and Afghanistan. And I don't know if they still have the Battle Bunny, but the same kind of concept. It was kind of a mascot. So,
but it's got to be a durable, the long-lasting ones, like the Thunder Mug, the toilet. I mean, it's got to be something because these things go through various traumatic experiences.
Oh, yeah.
It's not easy to be a battalion. It's not easy to be a battalion mascot along the lines of a buck or a Thunder Mug.
Well, our buck in 3.5 had its own carrying case. And it was a big, huge Pelican case, foam lined, cut out for the buck. And he'd go inside that and then get locked up. And then that's how he got shipped. So.
All right. Okay. Let's see. We talked about Texas. We talked about Granbury. I got a chance to meet your friends tonight.
Yeah. You know, as I say, you met Ron and Brenda Massengill, you know, the soon to be county judge.
And their little
granddaughter, Simone.
Simone.
And then you met Danny and Tink Toggle. He's one of the current judges right now here in Granbury.
And Tink is active politically, yes?
Yeah, she's really big as far as political stuff goes here in Granbury for the Republican Party. And Danny and Tink...
But she can't swim.
She can't swim.
I think... I don't want to say that's an implied mission, but
yeah.
I want to say it's an implied mission.
Danny and Tink had a son that was in the Marine Corps. They lost. He died in an accident in El Toro. He died outside the gates of El Toro. And, you know, so they buried their son. He was a Marine, and they're proud parents, you know, of a Marine. And to some degree, they're a Gold Star family. They lost a Marine during his time. They have a shrine in their house, his old room. With all his Marine Corps memorabilia, because he wanted to be a Marine ever since he was a little wee little kid, and
really?
He got his dream come true. And I met them one day, and we got to talking, and they took me in his room, and we were talking. And he served in, he was an avionics guy. I never knew him, but, you know, we're still Marines. So they had a small you can buy in the store, you know, the vinyl flags of the Marine Corps printed. So I made some phone calls, you know, realized I was still an important person. And I had hand-delivered Marine Corps battle colors, you know, the big, big, huge colors that sit behind the colonel desk, you know, commanding officer, delivered to them. And so they had that framed and they put it in their room. So we've been lifelong friends.
The big, big?
The big, like the big, big.
Embroidered?
Yeah, big. The big, the kind of, the one, the really nice one that sits behind the battalion commander. Yeah, the really nice one.
Tell me about presenting that. That's an emotional.
It was very emotional for them because they didn't expect it. You know, it was just something that, you know, like you said, was the right thing to do. You know, they paid the ultimate sacrifice as mom and dad of, you know, one of their sons, being a Marine. But it was really nice. And then to see that framed and hanging in his room today, it's still, you know, it's now it's that thing that just really stands out. When you walk into his room, that's the first thing you see, and it's like breathtaking.
No, it is. You know, I saw, I guess it's, at the time it was Colonel Nicholson. Now he's Lieutenant General Nicholson. He has the 5th Marine Regiment presented him with the regimental colors with his blood on it.
Yeah, the one that fell over on top of him.
Yeah, fell over. He was wounded when a rocket came through. Just a...
And his commo was killed.
Yeah. One shot in a gazillion, not even a million.
Yeah.
But,
went right through a air conditioning vent or something.
A window, yeah, that was had a piece of plywood over it. It was in sandbag. But he was in the corner looking at asking the commo who was sitting at the desk, asking a question, and he said, "What saved my life was I saw a wire shot, and I said, hey, what's this for? And he bent down, and that kind of protected him, but he's still very seriously wounded. When he got knocked to the corner, the colors fell on him. And then his XO, Lieutenant Colonel, now if not already, soon to be Lieutenant General Eric Smith, they had the colors framed and with his blood still on it and given to him. I remember going to dinner at his house in Quantico and walking into the room and looking.
Yeah.
And there's no doubt in your mind what it is. You're like, that's it. And you know, it was kind of interesting. When we were in Fallujah with him, when I was in Fallujah with him, he went back and he worked in that same office.
Yeah.
That he was wounded in. And so one night, I was back talking to him because he used to work late till like 2 a.m. And I said, is this weird for you? And he looked at me and he paused and he said, sometimes, often I'm so busy I don't think about it, but yeah, some nights. I mean, Mike, if you can imagine, and I think that's him being stout.
Yeah.
Because if you can imagine going back to where somebody was killed and you were wounded and you're working there, and there was still you could see the smoke and the pockmarks in the ceiling there.
Yeah, the scarring.
The scarring from it. And yeah. So he said, yeah. And then he told me the story. He got up and he kind of reenacted what happened. But that colors will stop you.
Yeah.
When you see it. But awesome. In fact, they thought he was dead. And then if you've ever heard Lieutenant General Smith tell the story, they heard a noise and kind of a groan and somebody trying to stand up in the corner, and it was Colonel Nicholson. And that was right before Al-Fajr, the second attack on Fallujah. And then he was fortunate enough. He made such a remarkable recovery.
Well, he was commanding 1st Marines at the time.
Yeah, RCT-1.
Yeah. And then he had to leave, and Mike Shupp took over from him.
And then I flew home after Al-Fajr and another month. So in mid-December, I flew home. I had taken leave, and I stayed for a year. So they sent me home. And I came out of the White House at Camp Pendleton, and I'm walking around the corner, and who comes walking the other way? And this is, 60, maybe 90 days since he had been wounded?
Mm-hmm.
And I could not believe it. And I wanted to – I'm not a hugger, right? But I – you know, you felt, like, holy shit. And how are you doing? And he was working on doing pull-ups.
Yeah.
And he said as long as he could qualify physically, which means 3 pull-ups. And he – I think there was some – he had to be able to hump up something. That he was going to be able to command a regiment again. So it's a very, very cool story, kind of, the way it ought to be in the murder. But Mike wound up, he wound up being the 1st Marine Division commander when Mike was the assistant CG.
The division gunner.
Were you? Well, that's what they called you.
Yeah, that was my official title.
Exactly. But we all know the power behind the throne.
Yeah,
all right, right. Let's talk about some guns. When you talk about having guns in your house, and if you have a collection like you do, if somebody were to ask you, hey, talk to me about securing my collection, how do I do it? Do you have recommendations you give to them?
Well, as you probably found out tonight, there's no little kids in our house.
Right.
My daughter has grown up with them, so she knows the respect. And sort of a gun that's on that front table there in the hallway, in a basket, ready to go as a holster, because that's what I usually carry as my carry gun when I walk out the house. But all my other guns are locked up in my master closet up on the shelf. I don't know if you saw them in there, but they're in cases. All secured,
so
unloaded.
Individual cases, unloaded, and secured.
Secured.
And secured how? A lock on the case and a trigger lock, or simply lock on the case?
Lock on the case.
Okay.
And then in my garage, I have a big safe around the corner that has all my other stuff in it.
How much do those big safes cost?
You can get them. I always tell people, don't spend a lot of money on them. The biggest thing you want to make sure is they're easy to get into. They got a lot of them. And then... what you want to spend the money kind of on is the humidity control, the climate control, the environmental piece of it. So you can get, either like the bags of the silicon gel that absorb all the moisture, or you can get an electronic that actually you can plug in that'll take all that humidity out of the air. So they're hermetically sealed. Get one that's fire retardant. You know, look at ones that will that'll guarantee that the guns will go through a fire and come out. Okay. Because the last thing you want to do is lock up your guns and then lose them in a fire because you never really got them out. So look for safes that are, and it's always, it comes down to, as I teach license to carry, is rule number one is your gun must be secured from everyone but you. So you want to make sure you want to have something that's, you get to, it's the balance of readily available but yet secured from unwary or unexpected visitors. So that's what it really comes down to.
Simone was here tonight. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a little girl in the house tonight. Do you do anything?
Yeah, and Simone is, I think, three. And so she was running around the house. So I made sure that everything was taken away, knives. And so even all my knives and things that can cause injury are in a case in that same where my closet is. So all my knives are in a case built for the knives. I even go as far as all my tactical flashlights that I carry with my hands are in those in case. All my accessories, I should say, are always secured. So to everybody but me.
There you have it. So again, how much money, if somebody was starting out, I guess it depends on
your collection.
Yeah, how much you want to spend.
I mean, if you got 40 guns, you don't want to go buy a 20-gun gun safe because they're not going to fit. So buy, it's always, if you own 10 guns and you expect that within the next, 10 years you're going to grow 10 more guns, then get a 20-gun gun safe. That way you're not buying two safes. You're not moving this heavy damn thing every time. It's better to go big. And then if you have more room, hell, put documents. Put all your birth certificates, your deeds, your titles, all your stuff that, you don't want to lose. Put all that stuff, and that's where we store a lot of our stuff, too. All our gold bars, all our gold cougarans from South Africa. Yeah.
That's where the WMD is?
Yeah, that's where the WMD is. No, that's a different thing.
Still yet to be located. And you would think we would have found it in Syria because we're looking in there because that's where it supposedly got moved to.
Well, I got moved again.
Oh, there you go. Any ideas? Any Egypt? Jordan?
Turkey.
Turkey. We're not doing so well with Turkey. What about, so what time are we leaving tomorrow? Coordinating his instructions. We said Sunday too late for us, so you need, how much sleep do you need?
I don't even know what time it is.
It's going on 11?
Oh, my God. No. 7 is fine. I mean, 5 hours of sleep is good for me.
Is it?
Yeah.
Still?
I mean, I'll get up, I'll have a breakfast of champions, 2 cups of coffee, and do what I got to do, and then we'll get on the road. We're going to pack, put a cooler with some drinks in it. I got my Yeti cooler, so we'll put that in the bed of the truck. I got my North Face bag that's waterproof. That goes in the bed of the truck.
I brought my Hydro Flask with me. I don't like to say this because my son, Patrick, thinks he knows everything. For instance, I wore the clothes on the plane that I'm going to wear to the change of command because I didn't want to put them in a suitcase. So he sees me. I told Mike this earlier, but he sees me. And now he's been like the XO of a rifle company. So, he thinks he's like Lord of the Manor. So he goes, really? You're that guy? Got to be in a suit? Everybody else? I'm like, dude, throttle back, okay, Lieutenant? Don't make me lock your shit up. But anyway, Patrick gave me this thing called the Hydro Flask. And in addition to, you could put ice in this and then put something cold in it and put it next to your nightstand and go to sleep. When you wake up, the ice will still be in it. It's amazing. But the thing I like about it the most, and Mike would appreciate this, in warmer climates, you put something cold in a glass and you have water running everywhere.
It doesn't sweat.
I hate that. And if
you get that water ring.
Right. Yeah. If you have paper documents on a table or something like that, or just wood, you're constantly doing that. This doesn't sweat, the Hydro Flask. So I brought my Hydro Flask. So I don't drink coffee. So, I don't need 2 cups of coffee. Well, maybe Mountain Dew or
yeah.
Mountain Dew worse. You know,
you don't want to be around me if I don't drink my coffee, though.
I used to put, like, I grab a soda when I was in Ramadi, and I put it in General Kelly's freezer. And when it got hot late in the day, I'd go back and, you know, something really cold, right? Well, once I dropped it in his office, it hits the deck, and it explodes. And there's Mountain Dew shooting on his wall, and he was gone. And I'm like, oh, shit. And so I run, I clean it up. And I got some on my boot, okay, Mountain Dew, and it was frozen, so it was just the I don't know if it was concentrated or whatever. I think that shit is still on. And so I'd look at it and say, how good can that be for your body?
If it burns and etches leather
into your boot.
Yeah.
Yeah. If that shit stays there, could that be good to put inside of a human organism?
Well, you know, you can put like rusted bolts in a can and pour Coca-Cola in there and then come back next day and all the rust is gone. Again, how good can that be for your body?
You can draw your own conclusions from that. But Mountain Dew tastes good.
Yeah, but I mean.
No, stop. Mountain Dew and the green burrito from 7-Eleven?
Yeah, I go with the Orange Crush, though.
Really?
I like the Orange Crush in the bottle I drew the mountain or the burrito from 7-Eleven.
The burrito,
yeah, Orange Crush.
Burrito.
I have like my thing is one. If I eat pizza, I gotta have root beer.
What? What are you four years old?
Yeah, there's something. No, and it goes back to.
It goes back to Eden Prairie.
No, it goes back to a. What the hell were those puppets called? Ernie and Bert. When I was a kid on Sesame Street.
You Ernie, watch Sesame Street?
When I was a kid. But listen, let me tell you a story real quick. So I'm watching
That's why you're so smart.
Well, I'm watching the Muppets, and Ernie and Bert are eating pepperoni pizza and drinking root beer. And I'm thinking... So when I was a little kid, I had root beer and and pepperoni pizza, and I was like, oh, this goes well together. Like,
are you making this up?
No, like chocolate chips.
It's true.
Yes, it's true. So still to this day, there's something about it brings you back. How could I make up Ernie and Bert with pepperoni pizza?
You can't pull up the second. This is something like if somebody walked up and said, hey, do you know that when the gunner goes and has pizza, he has pepperoni pizza and he has to have root beer because he watched Ernie and Bert on Sesame Street when he was a kid?
Yep.
And I'd say, sorry, man.
Don't buy that.
I don't buy that. That is not with the whole mosaic.
If you guys go on YouTube and you put in Ernie and Bert eating pepperoni pizza, drinking root beer, that segment will come up. And that is ingrained in me. It's like chocolate milk and it's like cold glass of milk with chocolate chip cookies. They go to and Oreos, right? Who drinks Coke and Oreos? No one. Or Oreos with tea? No. Water? Mm-mm. Cold glass of milk.
Cold glass of milk.
I mean, so
no
just, so to me,
pizza, but that's to everybody. Root beer.
Root beer, for some reason. Every time I'm eating pizza, I'm always thinking about, man, I wish I had a cool glass of root beer with this. Or if I'm drinking root beer, I'm always saying, man, I wish I had a nice slab of New York pepperoni pizza.
Wow. So when you drive, what's the eating plan for tomorrow? You don't eat at all?
No.
When you drive?
No.
Nothing?
No, because it makes me tired.
Food makes you tired?
Yeah, I just drink coffee.
So you drink coffee, and that's how you stay mean and not on the gas pedal?
And then, or cold coffee, like Starbucks, you know, the glass.
Not Starbucks, please. Are you a Starbucks guy?
No, but I like the...
You just said Starbucks.
But the Starbucks makes the cold glass of, like, the mocha or the vanilla.
But how do you know about it if you're not a Starbucks guy?
Because when I'm on the road...
Yes?
I don't like hot coffee from a gas station because it's a crapshoot.
Is it?
But I know for sure that I'm going to get all the good nutrients, sugar, the caffeine, and all that good stuff out of that Starbucks glass.
So you are somewhat a Starbucks guy when you're on the road?
Yeah.
Oh, shit. First Sesame Street. Now this?
Yeah.
Is there any other announcement you want to make? You got anything else? You got to
get out.
So if I want something to eat, I need to go to the gas station.
You know, gas stations have the best food because they're petroleum clubs all over the place.
Luke, so, here's a story about the Petroleum Club. Can we go by the Petroleum Club before we
Yeah, leave? We'll swing by the Petroleum Club.
So Mike's telling me, my typical question towards the end of the interview, so what do you got going today? Oh, going to lunch at the Petroleum Club.
With the boys.
Yeah, with the boys. And I'm thinking, in my mind, I have this mahogany panel place, and this is Texas, the land of petroleum, mahogany, like all the grand businessmen of Granbury and the region, Hood County.
Too much red velvet on the walls.
Red velvet, white tablecloth, silver, you know, the kind of goblet, water glasses, and I might go into the Petroleum Club. So I don't know what made me actually do it, but I looked it up on Google.
Well, you asked me where I was at, so I gave you the I gave you the address where I was at, and as I was getting off, I signed up. You know, they said, "Oh, okay, thanks, Gunner," and I left. Well, I didn't know until later on that day when I ran into Buck, because Buck listens to after the show, and he started laughing. He goes, "You know what Max said about you?" And I said, "What?" He goes, "You were walking into the Petroleum Club, you signed off," and then he goes, "I'm looking at this son of a bitch is at a gas station." And I was like, "Yeah, that's the Petroleum Club." I mean, because they serve burgers, fries, and all sorts of in the back corner.
I actually found the menu.
Yeah.
Of the Petroleum Club, and right. I was reading the menu.
So we have, so there's a Petroleum Club here in town. There's one in Bluffdale, just on the other side of town. And they're known for, like, this one is good for their cream. So Ralph, I had Ralph and Ron in Stitches about this because they ordered curly cut fries.
Mm-hmm.
And so I looked at the lady and said, "I'll take crinkle cut." And so we're sitting down, and Ron is always kind of like, whenever I say something, he's like, "Why did you say that? Or why are you picking that?" Because there's always a reason, right? And I always have, like, this bullshit scientific reason that I've come up with at the spot to give it to him.
So that's just enough, like, fact to make it a good line.
Yeah.
Right? That's the art form.
Yeah. And so...
And then let me tell you, the Gunner is, he's a master at it.
Yeah.
When he does it, you have to look and go, "You know what, that's the work of art right
Yeah.
there."
And if you don't know me, you're going to take everything I say face value. Like, oh my God, really?
Really, Gunner?
So I tell Ron and Ralph, I said, "No, crinkle cut. You know," I said, "you guys don't know what the difference between crinkle cut and smooth cut fries are?" And he goes, "No." And I said, "Well, crinkle cut, one, there's more surface area. So when you look at the fry, you're getting more potato per fry. More importantly, when you dip it in ketchup, those ridges catch more ketchup. So the flavor profile is a lot more tremendous every bite." So now Ron and Ralph get nothing but crinkle cut fries. And they tell people, like, "You know why I eat crinkle cut fries? Because it's got more surface area and it's got more dipping surface. You know, you get more ketchup in the scoop." And I'm like, see, there's converters. But it's true.
It's not. It's not which
is
better.
It's
totally fabricated.
True.
And he has his friends rolling around
ordering crinkle cut fries.
Better than ordering crinkle cut fries. They're repeating his bullshit filled explanation.
But it's funny.
But it does sound plausible.
It is plausible. If the Mythbusters were still on air, they could probably do this and prove
Are they not on the air anymore? That used to be a cool show.
They're only reruns now, but I think what Adam and Jamie would prove this one to be plausible.
The two weird-looking
Jamie
dudes.
And Adam.
Yeah, the two weird-looking dudes. Okay, so you're going to bed?
Not right now, no, but
right,
shortly.
So, and then and we'll be on the road tomorrow. So, as I said, tomorrow I've solved the wonders of technology, and you're going to hear a little bit of, like, banter back and forth between Mike and I as we encounter life out there headed east towards Camp Lejeune, North Carolina, where on Thursday we're going to gather with a lot of our friends, and we're going to we'll attend the change of command of the 2nd Marine Division. The torch, follow me.
Yeah, I can't decide whether or not to wear the summer straw hat or the black felt dress hat.
I like the summer straw.
You haven't seen the black felt, though.
I know, but it looks so pretentious in
but
the summer.
But it's a Stetson black diamond. So
like... True hat lovers are going to say,
people will say,
"Hey, who's that
guy wearing the black
diamond?"
Yeah. Damn, that guy must have some money.
He must know what's going on. Yeah, I like the look of the white. Well, but it's going to be at 7 o'clock at night. 1900 to all you military.
But see, guys. I'm wearing, see, they said business casual.
Yeah, what does that mean to you?
That means jeans.
When you interpret.
Jeans and a collared shirt.
Nice jeans?
Nice
or
jeans.
What? Okay, so
well,
nice jeans.
These are nice Wrangler jeans.
Nice jeans and a collared shirt.
Yeah.
And so you can nice go like you are, you're just going to throw a different lid on?
No, I have a nice.
Are you going to shave?
Yeah, I'll shave.
Why don't you shave today?
Because I'm a civilian.
Oh, I was going to say.
I thought you were going to say
I have a shaving chit.
I have a. Yesterday I was almost looking like a young Grizzly Adams. But the problem is it comes in all like salt and pepper, and I don't like looking like. Yeah.
The how fast does it take for that to glow?
This right here is probably 2 hours. So
no, it's not.
No, I mean it. But I'm like a Homer Simpson. If you ever seen like when you ever seen Homer shave,
no.
As soon as he's done shaving, it grows and it's back. That little dark shadow, yeah. So, but mine grows fairly fast, and I got a lot of hair on my head, and I'm one of the guys like. Mac, if you've never seen Mac, Mac's got a receding hairline. That suits him.
You know what? It's beyond receding.
Yeah, it's... Well, it's not a comb-over yet. It's not that pathetic kind of...
No, you know, there's a big... See, here's my problem. If you shave all your hair, okay, all the focus goes to your face. And then people are going to go, fuck, I didn't know Mac was that ugly.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, like, what do you mean? Like, well, he shaved his head, and now I looked at his face, and like... Dude's a bro. So, I mean, it's a bit of a distractor, and I think that's good. You know, the shaved head, I mean, I don't, what I'm trying to do is age gracefully, right?
Yeah.
And then, you know, the issue of male pattern baldness, you'll never deal with because you're like 8 boy.
No, I got too much hair on my head.
Yeah, your hair on your head. You got, I think Mike's got more hair on his knuckles than I have on the top of my head. In fact, easily he does.
Yeah, I got more hand on my left arm.
He was live streaming on Facebook, and he was preparing food. I said, dude, I could even see in the live stream, you need to shave your knuckles when you're handling food.
Got a lot of hair. But I don't have hair in my back.
Are you really?
Like
come on.
Yeah. No, see, I got no hair in my back. I'm not. Right. I'm not.
You're not that guy.
I'm not a Greek or a Turk. So,
those guys.
Yeah.
They take their shirt off at the beach.
You know, it's not bad because their shirt never touches their skin, so they always got that airflow.
That's the other?
Yeah, so you got a lot of airflow.
Being
the downside?
Being mini ape?
Yeah, downside is you got a lot of hair on your back. You look like a carpet.
And there's nothing you could do because if you try to shave it, it grows back in like 4 hours.
Yeah. And then it's stubbly. Oh, I couldn't imagine having. Could you imagine shaving your hair on your back and then having that stubble feel when you lay down? Oh,
no, I think
crazy.
You'd have to go get waxed
or electrical analysis.
Electrolysis.
Yeah, electrocuted.
Now they'll do it with laser too.
Yeah, so
that's for like Greek male models.
I wish my hair wouldn't grow as much as it did because it
really?
Grows fast.
I've never said that. I used to have great hair. If you see me as like at 20 and in my 30s, I remember the first time I noticed my hair was receding. I was driving home from a beach in Iowa City. And, you know, I had a helmet on, and I looked in the mirror, and I just casually looked in the rearview mirror, and it caught my eye.
Is my forehead getting bigger?
Yeah, it was like right, like if you go to the point of your head, it would have been right at about 10 o'clock. And it was, the gaposis was more than my helmet.
Yeah.
Because, you know, your helmet screws your head up. And I looked, and then I, like, went in my eyes, and I looked. I'm like, what the fuck is that?
Well, just so you know, when I was waiting for you to come out of the airport, I knew his plane had landed, and people were started coming out, going
hey,
to the
I'm
gate.
Just
going to
tell you right now, be very careful what you say
no,
right
I'm
now.
I'm just being nice. I'm being honest. So.
What is our motto about honesty?
Yeah,
it's overrated. It's overrated as a skill.
All right. Well, I'll lie a little bit then.
There you go.
So I was waiting for Mac to come out. So it's been 3 years since I've seen Mac.
Is that how long?
Yeah, my retirement. So I'm waiting for him to come out.
I had fun with that, by the way.
Yeah, so I'm waiting for him to come out, and then all of a sudden I see a guy come out, and he's wearing – because he told me he's wearing a jacket, a sport coat. So
not all of our friends showed up at that.
No. But we're not going to talk about that. So we're walking out, and the first guy comes out with a sport coat, and I see him, and I'm thinking, no, that can't be Mac, because that guy's got a walker. But it looks like Mac.
That's a pretty snazzy walker. So I'm like, no, that's not him. Then the second guy came out, and he's not in a walker, but he's in one of those being pushed by a Delta representative.
What the hell, man?
And I'm like, Max can't walk? Or no? What's going on? No, that's not Max. So I'm waiting. Then finally, I'm waiting to see, because I remember Wack wearing glasses, and then I didn't see him wear glasses, and I was like, oh, okay. He's sporting the no glasses look. But yeah, he looked like the, he had the typical lieutenant look from TBS. He had the khakis, the loafers, the sport coat. Yeah.
Lieutenants don't dress that nice.
Back in the day they did.
No, they didn't.
Yeah.
Their khakis were wrinkled.
Yeah.
Their shoes sucked. They weren't nice shoes.
I was also the rebel. So remember back in the day, I was Lassiter was my CO at TBS, and the rule was you had to wear slacks. No jeans, no shorts.
Slacks.
So I remember the first time.
Bullshit rule.
I know. So the first time I'm at WBC, and I'm getting ready to go on Liberty, so I put on shorts.
Tell everybody what.
WBC is the Warrant Officer.
Women's Officer Basic
Course. Yeah, Women's Officer Basic Course. So I was going through WBC.
It's the worst class to teach, dude, because they
you
know.
Got all these seasoned guys that have been around the Marine Corps.
They know everything. It's just painful.
Yeah, they know every uniform regulation, every regulation, because a lot of these are swaths of the Marine Corps.
Ugh,
so you got admin guys, you got comm guys. So.
And they're all trying to still show each other who's the smartest.
Yeah. So I'm walking, and I'm in the room, and I put on shorts. Like, you know, not short shorts, but like, you know, like California, like what you're wearing right now, almost to the knee.
Cool guy shorts.
Cool guy shorts and flip-flops and a collared shirt, untucked, and I'm walking out to my car. And I'll never forget this captain who's not at WBC. He sees me, and he's like, hey, Marine, come here. And I walk over, and I said, what's up, Cap? And he said, you know, we have a dress code here at TBS. And I said, well, you do? And he said, well, yes. Are you in the Warrant Officer Basic class? And I said, yes, I am, Captain. And he goes, carry on.
He didn't even go there?
He didn't even go there. And then,
why am I going to waste my time?
Well, then I saw him the next couple days later as one of my instructors, and he turned out to be a pilot, the captain. And so
like
I pulled him aside.
Yeah. Going to correct anybody.
So I pulled him outside later on, and he's a Harrier pilot, and he was teaching land math. Like, hello. Okay, so he's teaching the class, and I, after the break, and I kind of said, I said, hey, do you remember me? And he looked at me, and I said, I was the guy that was in the shorts that you're going to correct. And he goes, oh, yeah. He goes, what, Gunner? And I said, I'm just looking at you going, wait a second. You're a VMFA 214 guy, you know, the black sheep out of Yuma, and you're telling me not to wear shorts? And he's like, well, all right, just, you know what, just let it go, you know, because he knew I was gonna, like, come on.
You're gonna... You know what, I hate that. That was, first of all, you couldn't wear jeans. It was just
I didn't wear jeans. I wore shorts.
It was just so stupid. I remember changing, going out to my car and changing when I was the OPSO. I'm a major. I'm the OPSO at MHG, and I'm going someplace after work, so I got to change out of my uniform. So I open my car door, right? I have whatever I was going to wear, probably a pair of shorts, flip-flops, and a shirt. I take my boots off, and then I step outside. I drop my pants, and I put my shorts on, and this staff NCO comes walking over from where Amtrak School Barracks was at the other, just, I don't know, 50 meters away at the parking lot. And so I finish getting dressed. I'm getting ready to go, and he goes, excuse me. And I looked over, and I said, yeah. I said, yeah? And he said, could I have a word with you, sir? And I said, yeah. He said, you know, we have a school over there, and then, you know, changing, like, right next to your car is, like, not very professional. And I said, really? I said, who the fuck are you? And he said, sir, I'm Staff Sergeant. I said, hey, Staff Sergeant, I'm not in your school, okay? I've got a real job. I got someplace really to go. And if I decide I'm changing my pants here right next to my car with my door open and me standing between my door and my car, guess what? I'm doing that. If you don't like it, Major McNamara, I'm the operations officer right there. Go ahead. Have at it.
You tell me I'm tripping on power.
Oh.
Yeah.
I hate that kind of chicken shit.
Yeah.
I'm going to go over and roar. And you know what? And they do that.
I'm not a power tripper.
Yeah. Like, I'm going to go set that guy straight. I'm like, so.
But
leave
you know,
me alone.
If he lets that go, the fabric that keeps the Marine Corps together just It's amazing to me. Yeah, you're right.
It's amazing. And I'm sure you stood there and looked and go,
because I don't know how many times, like, hey, Marine. And, you know, what do you, come here for a second.
And I start walking up, and they're like, oh, sir, I didn't know it was you. And I said, what do you want? And they're like, oh, we were just going to tell you about having your hand in your pocket. And I'm like, yeah, my hand is in my pocket. It's cold outside. And they're like, well, sir, we don't walk around with our hands in our pocket. And I said, good, then keep that up. And they're like, no, well, sir. I said, if you're trying to correct me and tell me to keep my hands in the pocket, I'm going to tell you right now. I'm not in the mood. Carry on. Have a good day. You know, and they realize that at that point, like,
it's not going the way I thought it would go.
Yeah, this is not. It didn't turn out like, oh, you know.
Because normally what you want is a screwed-up Marine, a squared-away Marine, who's got a clue about leadership, but a screwed-up Marine who looks at you with a guilty look and says, oh, sorry, Corporal, good point. Thank you. And he winks at his buddy, turns around.
I used to get the, you know, in the mornings I'd go through and the chief would be there at the division and say, hey, Gunner, you got a minute? Yeah, come here. So we'd come in there and we'd sit down and he goes, hey, try, you know, next time when you're doing something, I'm like, what are you talking about? And he goes, someone complained to you? He goes, no, kinda. And they're like, it was the gunner, but then we realized it was the gunner and we weren't going to say anything, so we brought it up to you, chief. And the chief's like, what do you want me to do about it? You don't work for me either. You know, like, let me go to the general on this? And they're like, no, sir. And you're like, okay.
Go ahead. Go to the general on
this. Yeah. And you're like, I'm going to go talk to General Nicholson and say the gunner had his hands in the pocket. I mean, you know what he's going to tell me? Seriously? And this is our biggest concern in the division?
You're wasting my time.
Yeah. Go ahead and approach the gunner.
You don't have anything else to do but this.
Yeah. I'm going to ask you to walk into the Sergeant Major's office with my hand in the pocket, see if he'd do anything. He'd never bite. He was smart. Never, ever bite. And I used to do stuff on purpose, like unbless my boots and walk by. And he would never bite. I mean, I tried so hard to get him, but he was smart enough to figure, you know what? But, yeah, I mean, but, see, I don't buy this whole, this little episode right here is going to tear apart the whole Marine Corps. Right now, if we let this go unresolved, the fabric of the Marine Corps is going to unravel, and we're going to become hooligans.
You know what? And I recognize similar in that we selectively obey laws. But let me just tell you know a shitbird when you see him.
Yeah.
Right. And then, you know, guys, in my opinion, that are grandstanding because they do it in front of other people, like, go lock this guy on.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't play that game.
No, I don't. I'm not a big fan of that.
Yeah, especially after I've been NJP'd. Like, what's he going to say to me?
Yeah. And, you know, to remain nameless, one of the sergeant majors there, so I was going to correct me on wearing my I think I told you this, about my sunglasses. My sunglasses were not issued. But yet they were still military. They're black. They weren't some eccentric blue, you know, whatever. They're black. They weren't mirrored. They were black sunglasses. But they were nicer. They were the kind that you'd be proud to wear even out in town. I mean, they were nice. They were stylish. But again, they weren't over the top. They were matte black. They're just nice. They were nice. You could wear them out in town.
Made by who?
Wiley X. Who now supplies them to the Marine Corps. No, they supply them to the Marine Corps now. Right. But back then they didn't. It was ESS. ESS was the main supplier to Marine Corps.
Right.
So Wiley, I'd worked with Wiley, and actually the Wiley X provided more protection.
Right.
Mm-hmm. We didn't nail it down later, but I was wearing them, and the sergeant major approached me, and he said, sir, I want to talk to you about your choice of sunglasses. And I said, okay, sergeant major. And he goes, like, well, we only wear issued sunglasses. And I said, okay, no problem. What's the issue? He goes, well, those aren't issued sunglasses. And I said, no, they were issued.
Where was
it? SY. And I said,
and we're not in the field.
No, we're in garrison. And I was actually walking in my office. No one's around. I'm walking out of the field with my sleeves. Of course, my sleeves are not rolled up because they're down because I'm coming back from the field, and that was another issue. But anyway, you know, he said, you can't wear those sunglasses. And I said, well, they're issued. And he said, well, you didn't get those from supply. And I said, no, but they were issued. He goes, well, they got to be issued from our supply. I said, where's that rule? Show me in writing where that rule is actually followed this rule. And he's like, well, sir, you know, what does this tell the Marines? And at this time, I was like, had it up to here with this guy. And if I said his name, people would know, but he was infamous for the whole oorah thing in 3-5. He wouldn't allow anybody to say oorah because he thought that meant you're going to kill somebody. So he outlawed when people would say oorah, he would outlaw that. You can't say oorah. Like, what? I mean, even the battalion commander, like, hey, so maybe you're crazy. So, but that was his big deal. So,
I've never heard that story.
Yeah, I'll tell you that whole story another day. But we're having that conversation, and he goes, what is this going to tell the Marines about, you know, the oorah thing? And I said, well, if it tells anything, it says do well in the Marine Corps, you'll get promoted, and then you can do whatever the fuck you want. And that kind of left it.
How'd that go over?
Well, not very good, because Colonel Padilla came to me and talked to me about it and said, tone it down a little bit. I said, no problem. I mean, he got it. I mean, he understood. I mean, it's the whole, come on. I mean, pick your battles, man. I mean, Jesus. I mean, talking about, really? I mean, what good is it going to come from?
Right.
I mean, I could see if I'm wearing Tiger Stripe Vietnam era camis or something, because I think they're cool, you know? Yeah, I got it. I mean, the whole thing, and, you know, even my vest at the time, I got a prototype vest that the Marine Corps was getting ready to buy. And one of the contractors in Coast sent it to me because I'd worked on it. Said, hey, here's what the Marine Corps is going to get in about a year. Go ahead and try it out and let me know. So I wore it. And so I was wearing it around. Everybody was wearing that big ass heavy
straitjacket.
Yeah, I forget what that thing's called. So I'm wearing this nice, you know, now, well, we always refer to it then, was kind of like what the Special Forces guys wore. It was really small and lightweight. And
so we're talking about the plate carrier.
The plate carrier, yeah. the revised plate carrier. Right. So I was wearing that around, and people would give me a hard time, like, hey, that's not issued. Yeah, it is. Give me a break. And so when we got to regiment, I got Dave and Zikafus that helmet that I wear, the really nice one, the high cut. You know, the it was more of like the MARSOC Special Forces helmet.
Right.
It was ballistic and everything, and everybody gave me, they're like, oh, why are the gunners wearing a special helmet? Yeah, the gunner is wearing a special helmet. I mean, what's the difference? Well, our helmet's not good enough for you? No, it's not. This one is better. That's why I'm wearing it, idiot. I mean, where do we want to go with this? I mean,
we want you, actually. No, it's just, this is my opinion, but first of all, who's coming at you with the criticism, and how do they come at you?
Yeah.
If it's a serious issue.
It's whiny.
And they're a serious person, then they normally say, hey, could I have a word with you? Hey, so-and-so. Now, for instance, I would tell you, I think that, you know, for instance, if you're wearing non-issued sunglasses in the field with other Marines around.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, tortoise shell. Yeah.
Right. That's not cool. It's not appropriate because you're setting a bad example. But this kind of stuff, to me, was stupid, and it was motivated not out of I want to do something good. It was motivated out of chicken shit, and I never.
Well, and so even, I mean, like, when we were, I mean, I wrote an article on suppressors. I was doing all the suppressor testing, and then again, when I got to operation, I had suppressors available, so I brought one with me, and we were testing out, and we were shooting it, and I gave my scout snipers all suppressors on their guns in 3.5. And so I had one, and all the scout snipers had theirs on their guns. And I'll never forget, one of the guests when we were there, one of the officers was like, hey, Gunner, you know, is that an authorized piece of equipment? And I said, yeah, what do you mean? Well, who authorized it? Me. And they're like, no, I mean, I said, it's tested. Yes, it's tested. It's certified. It's all through, you know, Dahlgren and everything. It's in the inventory. It's got an NSN. It's everything. It's just, we don't have it. We're using it as a test. And they gave me such a problem. So I finally said to him, you want me to get you one? And they said, oh, yeah, sure. I said, no, you're not going to get one. I just wanted to see if you wanted one, just to see where my fact was. But, yeah, it proved to me that you're whining because you don't have one. You want one, and you're willing to bend the rules if I gave you one.
And it's cool guy stuff.
And it's cool guy stuff because it separates. Yeah,
cool.
I'm cool. You're not.
You're not.
Yeah.
All right. And as they say in show business, that'll do it. Hit the music, boys. Yeah, my thanks to Buck, Ron. Got a chance to meet all Mike's friends from Granbury. So they all came over for dinner at the Musselman residence tonight. So, and their spouses came, and some other friends came. So just wonderful people, and honestly, you can, we talk about it, but small town America is where it's at. So, no, congratulations to the gunner.
for hitting it out of the park. You know, first of all, knowing what he wanted, which not everybody does, and then second, getting himself and his family to a place where they could live around good people and experience all the best things that the country offers. So, nice going. Who knew he had it in him? All right, if you're just tuning in, you're going to hear news headlines for the day, so don't touch that dial. You also hear some information about the retirement system choices. So if you're looking for information about that, I would tell you to look at it. As a tease, in another life, I used to be a broker for Merrill Lynch. Yeah, so I actually have a clue about investments. There you have it, Mac the Wonderful. So that'll do it from Granbury, Texas, on a Tuesday. Headed for North Carolina tomorrow. No, we're headed for North Carolina today. Yeah, what am I saying? Actually, we might already be on the move. So tomorrow what you'll hear, you're going to hear a little bit of Mac and the Gunner on the move. Trust me, you don't want to miss that, as well as a couple other interviews. So, again, Almarine Radio going expeditionary. Learn as we go. I appreciate your patience and everybody that listens. I also appreciate the financial support of people that listen. It's motivating, to say the least, and humbling. So thank you very much. On a Tuesday, Almarine Radio is over and out. From Granbury, Texas, out. In Hood County, Texas.